Hey there, Getting in the Loop listeners. Ever wondered what can be done in your industry to help create a more circular economy? To mark the one-year anniversary of the Getting in the Loop podcast, I've put together a short ebook to help you navigate key circular trends in textiles and apparel, ICT and electronics, and packaging. And it includes links to related reports as well as relevant Getting in the Loop podcast episodes. It's yours to receive when you join up to our podcast newsletter at circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. So head over to our website to get your copy of the Circular Sectors Navigator. That's again, circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. Hi, I'm Katie Whelan, and join me each week as I talk with experts around the globe about circular economy. You'll find out what's being done to make it a reality, and if it can really solve the problems it promises. It's time for Getting in the Loop. Welcome back to the Getting in the Loop podcast. I'm your host, Katie. This month, Getting in the Loop is partnering with the International Society for the Circular Economy ahead of their inaugural conference, which will be a digital event and will be held on July 6th through 7th of 2020. Throughout June, we've been talking with some of the keynote speakers and people behind the event, including last week's episode with Walter Stile, the honorary president of the International Society for the Circular Economy. If you haven't listened to that one already, definitely check it out as Walter and I chat about the future of circular economy post-COVID-19. Today, we're getting in the loop with Anders Wijkman. Anders is honorary president of the Club of Rome and chairman of the governing board of ClimateKick. In today's episode, Anders reflects on our progress towards a circular economy and the role that cities play in the transition to a circular society. You will learn about ClimateKick, hear about Anders' experience with environmental policy in the European Parliament, and find out more about his upcoming keynote at the International Society for the Circular Economy. I hope our conversation gets you excited for his keynote in July. You can find out more about the International Society for the Circular Economy Conference and how to register at our website, gettinginthelooppodcast.com. Now on to today's show.
So I'm Anders Wijkman. Currently, my most important assignment is chairman of ClimateKick.
Yes. Very important. Is it an organization, or how would you kind of call ClimateKick? Because I know they're funding many different initiatives and important projects.
Well, it's an institution, public-private partnership that was launched in 2010. So we have 10 years of experience. We have around 400 partners, cities, both big cities and medium-sized cities. Oh, sorry. We have universities and scientific institutions, and we have startups, medium-sized companies, and also some big companies. And the idea is to promote innovation for low carbon solutions. You could say it's of course an institution because we do receive money from the European Union and to be distributed widely in support of a lot of projects. We have a lot of educational activities, entrepreneurship support activities. And then we focus on primarily four areas: circularity and circular economy stuff, transformation of cities, and transformation of land use. And we also have a focus on the finance sector. And what has happened is that we realized after some 6-7 years of activity that vertical interventions and single point solutions, there are good examples, but they don't really lead to the impact that we would like to see. we can't really say that we have had a major impact with our activities on reducing emissions over these years. So we are no longer in the ball game of cutting percentages here and there of emissions. We are in the ball game of really bringing emissions down to almost the level of zero, and that means transformation. We have to do things differently, and that means you have to change the systems. And let's take mobility as an example. You don't solve the problem by just changing the engines of the cars, because you have congestion, you have too much material throughput. So if you really want to do something about transportation, you need to look at how you design cities and city neighborhoods, because 80% of emissions originate in and around cities. You have to look at public transport. You have to look at walking, biking, and of course you have to look at the vehicles. But that's only one of the issues. So that's why this systemic approach and using innovation for system change is very, very interesting. And we have now launched a series of so-called deep demonstration projects, where the aim is to really demonstrate in practice, in real time, how this is happening or could happen. And one of the deep demonstrations is clean and healthy cities, where we have altogether 15 cities in Europe that are part of this. And the idea is that it should be very much demand driven, not supply driven. Because if it's supply driven, you don't get the impact that you should. You need cities to really define their intent, their objectives, and then look at in a systematic way, now where are the entry points? How can innovation help? And it's not only technology, it's organizational issues, it's governance issues. It's very much a question of how do different departments or agencies in a city, city agencies, how do they cooperate? Mm-hmm. They most often work in silos because we are vertically organized. So it's a profoundly different way of addressing
mm-hmm. And in the report that you, this new paper that you did, it is for Climate Kick, looking at sort of the role of cities and kind of what is already being done, from my understanding, and also what in the paper you argue to move towards a more systems approach. Are there any good examples or some good success stories that you have seen coming out of different cities?
No, we are in the beginning, it will take some time until we really can demonstrate. And one of the problems is that we don't have yet performance indicators that can really demonstrate mm-hmm. this. And it's quite easy to measure the impact in terms of performance by a vertical intervention.
Right.
But when you look at the system, it's much more difficult. So there is a lot of learn by doing mm-hmm. here. But we are absolutely convinced that this is the only way forward, because we can no longer have a society where we deal with one issue at mm-hmm. a time. And by the way, that's one of the reasons we are in this mess.
Which mess? The environmental mess, or the kind of the COVID mess? Yeah,
no, not the COVID mess. COVID is part of the picture, because It seems very likely that the origin of the pandemic comes from the proximity of wild animals and human beings, and in particular wet markets in China. So if we had been more careful about nature and natural habitats, this would probably not have happened. But you know, over the last 100 years, production growth has been the number one objective in society. And it was understandable, not least when societies were very poor, that almost anything, any kind of economic activity contributed to improvements. But over the years, we have seen that we have an economic system where short-term profit maximization is really leading to a lot of problems, not only climate change, but overuse of many ecosystems, the erosion of biodiversity, the erosion of topsoils, pollution of water, overfishing in the oceans, etc. All these things that happen is because we have put an economic model on top of nature and thought that somehow it would work. But we never really bothered to understand how nature works. So it's very much a question of economists are poorly trained. They are mainly interested in the relationship between producers and consumers. And nature they look upon more or less as a constant. And whenever they talk about pollution or ecosystem decline, they talk about externalities. And the terminology indicates that it's not very serious. It's an external effect.
We don't have to think about that until later. It's something that's there, but it's not in the main frame or focus.
And of course, they argue in favor of market prices should reflect the true costs of production, but they leave it to the political system to introduce taxes and fees and whatever and regulation. So I think we have an economic model that is not fit for purpose, and we have a capitalistic system that is tremendously short term. Look at the stock exchange. I mean, I think it's a joke, the whole thing. You trade by robots, etc. I mean, it's so perverse, and the only thing that matters is short term profits. For that right. system, then of course there are individual companies who work differently, and shareholder value is the top priority, which means that all the other stakeholders have very little to say. So no wonder we are in this mess.
So and I would also argue that we need more of this systems perspective. But then getting to that approach, what do you see as the way forward? I mean, I know that in like 2016, you conducted a Club of Rome study and you looked at five different countries and circular economy, and you argue, circular economy is the way forward. So picking up on what you said about, this systems change and this need for a change, I'm curious kind of what your thought, are we moving in the right direction? And if yes, what still needs to be done?
Well, the circular economy is one important step in the right direction. But of course, it's not a panacea, because when you make an economic system more efficient, in this case, resource efficient, you free up resources, and those resources will be used either to demand more energy resources in the area where you did some improvements or somewhere else. I mean, the best case is if you move from having a car that is a gas guzzler to a car that is more fuel efficient, you tend to drive longer distances. If you insulate your house and you use less energy, your energy bill goes down. Well, you may add another room to your building or whatever. So that's normally happening. So there are rebound effects. And by the way, nothing is 100% circular. That's why I never really liked the term. I would have used the spiral economy instead, because nothing is 100% circular. We lose quality all the time. But to move from a linear production model to a circular production model is a huge step in the right direction. And by the way, it's a metaphor, and there is no good definition of what the circular economy is. It's everything from, many people think it's about recycling. Recycling, I would say, is one of the least effective ways. The most effective way is, of course, to extend product life or products. So you don't build in obsolescence. You can use them much longer. Secondly is to reuse products or reuse components that you don't have to recycle in the way that you have to turn them into something new again. Rather just, you know, use components again or recondition the product and use it again. Remanufacturing is another. You know, Caterpillar taking back big engines and redo them and offer them again. And there are many examples of that. Then comes recycling. And recycling today is quite ineffective. I was chairing the Swedish recycling industry for a number of years. And we did a study where we looked at the value of recycling. And the question we asked was, if we put into the market, let's say, 1,000 euros of plastic or of steel or of cement or aluminium, after first use, how much is still captured of that value? And we came to the conclusion, on average, it was only 25%. And for plastics, it was only 8%. Simply because the design is such that you cannot do much of what you collect. Well, steel is an exception, because there, more than 50% is reused. Aluminium, about 35% is reused. I thought that aluminium would be much more going around in closed loops, more or less, because it's so expensive. But yes, beer cans and Coca-Cola cans, they are being recycled quite effectively. But aluminium in so many other contexts are present in the form of alloys, in the form of composite materials. So it's very difficult to do anything about it, because it's not designed for reuse. Plastics, that's a nightmare. So many qualities.
So many types, so many colors.
And then you have electronics. Most of it is not recycled and reused, because it's too expensive. And if you take a mobile phone, for instance, there are a lot of rare earth metals in this one. But only in small quantities, so it doesn't really pay to collect them and to retrieve them. And then the design is such that it's very, very difficult to do it. So basically what is retrieved is copper and gold. That's it. And this is a colossal waste. We threw away a lot of money. And then, of course, parallel to that, you have all the pollution and all the carbon emissions. So I would say recycling, we can improve it a lot, but then we have to improve design. And I think we have to have a requirement on new products that they should include a certain percentage of reused materials. There is, of course, another aspect of circularity, and that is the sharing economy. And yet another one, which is very important, is to move from, to change the business models, to moving from selling stuff to offering high quality services. Why the hell do I have to own this one? This means that when it's being sold, Apple in this case has no more responsibility. They leave the end of the product to somebody else. If instead I was renting or leasing this, it would be their responsibility to care for the materials till the bitter end. And they would then be interested in making sure that once it comes to an end, they can retrieve the quality that is still there. So, I mean, there are so many aspects of this. I've done a lot of studies into it. And the one we did in 2016, 2017, we had five best European countries to start with. And then we added Poland and the Czech Republic. So there is a study for them as well. And we came to more or less the same conclusions. Basically, if you move in the direction of enhanced energy efficiency and material efficiency, including changing business models in the direction I said, offering more services, over a 15-year period, we looked at, you know, the period from 2015 to 2030, with the assumptions we had, we came to the conclusion that you would cut carbon emissions by roughly 2/3. And that you would add something in the range of 2 to 3, or maybe even 4% of the labor force in terms of new employment. And that's quite significant. Poland was a little bit different because of their quite old-fashioned agricultural sector. So the study there came out a little bit different. But for all the other countries, the picture was more or less the same. So that means that there are a number of co-benefits when you move in this direction.
So co-benefits in terms of environmental and also societal, like job creation, things like that.
And then the study we did for the recycling industry, that was in 2018. I could send you a summary in English. Then we also added that you would save a lot of money. But the new paper I did for OECD, it was not the paper for Climate Kick, but I brought to the fore a lot of the experience of Climate Kick. The idea was really to, on the one hand, take stock of the role of cities in moving towards this more circular model, to also try to understand what's going on. And there is a lot going on. And then finally draw some conclusions. One of the main conclusions is that we need a more systemic approach. Otherwise, this will not really be what we expect. And then, of course, I address a number of other issues, like how can we use digital technologies, artificial intelligence, etc. How can we merge these agendas? Because there are many opportunities. Another aspect is, of course, public procurement. How public procurement can help promote this development.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts from sort of what you see with circular economy and your kind of vision for the future there. Do you think that, I know it's difficult to say which one is more important, but, and then probably your answer will be some sort of the combined two, but like business and policy, who has a role to, an important role to play in sort of leading this change? Like, is it, yeah, do we need more sort of policies like procurement initiatives and things like that to actually kind of spur business in the correct direction, or will they also undertake it themselves? If you know the study that you had with 2018, with that there is an economic incentive for it as well. So I'm just curious if you can say a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, first answer is that the incentive structure of the economy is flawed because we don't pay for the externalities. We will always question, we will always discuss and dispute how large these costs are, because experts will not totally agree. But we know that they are not zero in most cases. So it is too cheap to use nature. And unless you correct that, and I know again that from own experience in the recycling industry, there you would imagine in a situation where everybody talks about the circular economy, that recycling companies would earn quite a lot of revenue. In fact, they don't, because the secondary materials market doesn't really work very well. In some areas it does, but in most areas it does not. And that's because of the design, and that's because virgin materials are most often less expensive. And as long as that is the case, this will not take off. I mean, everybody says, oh, circularity, that's good, let's move against, but it doesn't happen by itself. If the market would lead to this situation, it would have happened already. But it doesn't. It's a big market failure. So you have to look at the cost structure of the economy. And the most logical thing would be to change the bloody tax system. I mean, in my country, 60% of tax revenue comes from taxing labor. 25% is VAT. Between 9 and 10% is capital taxes, taxes on companies, etc., corporate taxes and so on. A little bit more than 5% the taxes on energy, resource use, and pollution. Give me a break.
We had Walter Stahl on the podcast talking about taxing digital transactions instead of labor. Is that was something that he had discussed? I don't know if you had thought about that before.
Well, that's a way of. Yeah, that's a way of sharing the benefits of the digital revolution, of course. Because now, as we know, you can become a billionaire in a few years by just issuing a smart app. It's in a way, it's quite ridiculous how easy for some of the smart minds it is to create fortunes. If you compare to industrial society where it took decades to build the same wealth. So I think that the wealth generated by a few individuals in that part of the economy should, of course, somehow be shared in a way. So that's why I think that type of taxation is interesting. But that will not automatically lead to a circular economy. You need to make it more expensive to use nature. It's as simple as that. We know when we put a tax on energy that people get an incentive to be more efficient. Energy efficiency investments pay, etc., etc. And it's the same with materials, of course. And it will encourage innovation. So I think the cost structure and a tax reform. And then design requirements. I don't think you should be able to put products on the market. In the normal case, there are of course exceptions, but in the normal case, what you put on the market should be easy to the ingoing materials and components should be easy to reuse. Mm-hmm. That should be a mandatory provision. And I think the European Commission is moving in that direction. Because if you look at the Green Deal, that's part of it. It's ironic because 15 years ago, when I was a member of the European Parliament, there was a proposal by the European Commission called the Integrated Product Policy. It was something similar to the Circular Economy Package that they launched 10 years later. And we discussed exactly these issues at that time. And I was the rapporteur, so I wrote a long report. And one of my proposals was that there is something called the Eco-Design Directive in the European Union, which mainly focuses on energy efficiency. So it has been used to make computers and car engines, electric motors, refrigerators, washing machines, etc., more energy efficient. And everybody thinks it's a good thing. I don't think anyone, lighting was also part of that, the change from the traditional lamp to
LED,
LED, etc. There was some opposition, but in general, it was good. People saved a lot of money. We became more energy efficient, etc. And I introduced at that time the idea that this directive should be used to regulate material use as well. And you can't imagine, but the commissioner who was responsible at that time, he was a quite powerful social democrat from Germany, Mr. Verheugen. He was Minister for Industry and Enterprise. And he looked at me when we were debating this in the European Parliament, and he said, "Aber Herr Wickman, das ist doch Kommunismus." So that just shows how sensitive the issue has been, because industry, to start with, didn't like the idea that anyone had any views on how they sourced materials. That was part of their freedom. Now, 15 years later, I think almost everybody agrees that this is very much needed. Otherwise, we will plunder the earth.
There have been some other additional design guidelines that have started to creep into it too, with like minimum lifetimes of certain products and things like that. So it seems to be moving in the right direction, but it's slow, as you kind of illustrate with the fact that you were talking about these things 15 years ago. So I know we're almost out of time, and you're a very busy man. So I would like to, of course, let you get on with your day. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about the upcoming International Society for Circular Economy conference, because you're going to be taking the virtual stage as one of the keynote speakers. Can you give us a little bit of a insight into what you plan to be talking about? My guess is it's something related to what we've been talking about already today.
I think the concepts are poorly understood. So that's why it's very important. And if you read my paper, my OECD paper, the first 15 pages gives a background to this discussion, which is not new. It has been ongoing since the 1960s and 70s. And the Club of Rome, where I was the chair for several years, it was one of the main issues in the Limits to Growth report, that society would run into problems either because of scarcity or resource depletion in some areas, and or pollution, or a combination of the both. And we are moving there very rapidly. In many areas, maybe you cannot talk about absolute scarcity, but you can talk about a lot of pollution. And the way we use all this, as all these materials, has a profound effect on biodiversity and on ecosystems. I'm a member of the International Resource Panel. We did a study and we came to the conclusion that resource extraction and production in total amounts to 50% of the carbon emissions and more than 80% of biodiversity loss. So we have to stop this. We have to do it in a much more intelligent way. So I will give a background to that and put it into a wider perspective, and then zoom in on the experience we have within Climate Kick doing systems innovation and really advocate a more systemic approach.
Yeah,
And I think that's where I can make a difference.
Yeah, well, I look forward to tuning in to that keynote. I, of course, will be attending the conference, and I'm sure that some of the listeners will, or if they aren't planning, then maybe they'll be planning to attend now. So I'll make sure that there's a link to the conference page on the website for this podcast so they can find out more about that. Before we end our discussion today, Anders, I just had to ask you two things. The first is, I was just a little curious about your thoughts on circular economy fitting into the post-COVID coronavirus world, because that's kind of everything that everyone has been talking about for the last month or so. So do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share?
Well, I'm sort of perplexed by the fact that so far very few governments seem to have given any reflection or thought about the long-term effects of their recovery plans. And I think that's very much needed. And I don't think we should aim at going back to what was before the crisis. We should take the opportunity, because then we would just be back in a society where an increasing number of people were concerned about the threat of a climate crisis. So we should really, since we are spending so much money now on trying to save the economy and give it a kickstart, we should of course do it in a way that we promote the right kind of things. And that's why I think just to pour money into airlines, car manufacturers, oil and gas companies is utterly stupid. We should at least put some requirements on them in terms of cutting emissions and promoting innovation, etc. So the circular economy is of course very much at the heart of this. Circularity is harder, and whether we talk about the technical system or technical part of society, or we talk about the biological or part of biosphere, the principles should be the same. So, and as a matter of fact, I was part of a discussion with Vice President Timmermans the other day, focusing exactly on this. How can we make sure that the recovery includes components and ingredients that really helps transform society? But it has to be done, of course, in an intelligent way, because otherwise people may react. There are so many unwanted consequences that of this crisis, so that have to have first
of
priority.
Course, yeah, it's a very uncertain time for many people. So,
but you know, it's ironic that we are now pouring billions and billions and billions of euros and dollars on the economy, and if somebody asked before the crisis for a few billions to do green investments, they were told we cannot afford this. So I mean, it's like living in different worlds. So this just shows that once the crisis hits us very hard now, almost anything is possible. But more long-term problems or problems around the corner, we don't seem capable of addressing them. So it's not only that the economy is very short term, and that's part of the problem, of course, but we as individuals are very short term, because it's only about 10,000 years since we were hunters and gatherers, and then it was the immediate that was important. Tomorrow was not so important. So maybe that's
how to delay our gratitude or satisfaction, or right, like it's more easy to check your phone immediately because you get a response rather than wait for a little bit.
We live in an era of instant gratification, and that's part of the problem, of course.
Well, before you go, Anders, I just want to ask you the question that I ask all of the guests that come on the Getting in the Loop podcast, which is about a serious game that I created about materials and critical materials. And in the game, you're a product producing company and you have to collect the materials to make your product. So there's actually a smartphone in the game and you have to collect the antimony and indium and those types of materials that are in the smartphone to make your product. And you're trying to collect these materials and produce your products, but then there's different events that happen in the game and they can hinder you from actually collecting your products or actually enable you to collect your materials better. So what I ask the guests is if you could create sort of an event that would happen in the game, what kind of event would you focus it on? And often guests link their event to some sort of real world happening that they see that affects kind of materials and products or a vision that they have for the future. So do you have something that comes to mind? I can give you an example of an existing kind of event in the game. So one of the events is that there's an extended producer responsibility. So if players are producing a smartphone and then they actually produce, they get all the materials for their smartphone and they produce it, then if they send it to the landfill, they have to pay a fine. So it's about getting people to kind of think a little bit more about how we use materials in our daily lives and where materials are coming from. So I don't know if there's some sort of event that you think.
You mean an event, some kind of policy measure?
Yes.
Or
some kind of policy measure or technological disruption or geopolitical disruption. Those are all types of kind of event themes that happen in the game.
Well, I think the best thing that could happen, or one good thing that would change this, would be a tax reform of the type I saw, lower taxes on the income, mm-hmm. on labor, and increased taxes on the use of nature. And part of that package would also be to remove VAT on reused materials, because that would directly give a boost to the secondary materials market.
Right. Exactly. We've seen some different policies in Sweden, at least, where they've tried to reduce VAT for like repairs and refurbishments.
Yeah, that's a small but good step in the right direction, but it's not sufficient.
Yeah. So you're saying extend it to materials as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I'll be sure to link the reports and the items that we discussed in the podcast on our show notes. But where can listeners go to learn more about you and the topics that we discussed? Do you have a Twitter that you'd like to share, or a website?
I'll send it to you. And I have a website where I have some of my stuff. And I'll also send you the study, the English summary of the material value study.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and links, go to our website at gettinginthelooppodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to our mailing list to have new episodes delivered to your inbox every Monday. See you next week.